The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. Among those, on Sunday at 7:30, what's being billed as a house concert that will take place at Techline Studios in Champaign, featuring Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews and the Old Time Players, who are Paul and Christine Breen. And Christine and Banjo Billy will be on the show later this hour, playing for us live. Don't think Paul's coming along, but then you never know. We've had surprises before. First up, I'll be talking with flutist and tin whistle player Lawrence Nugent. He is an All-Ireland champion on both of those instruments, and he is coming with Irish guitarist Patsy O'Brien to the Independent Media Center as a presentation of the Piper's Hut concert series this Saturday night at 8 o'clock. That's in downtown Urbana. And I'll be pleased to talk with Lawrence coming up very shortly here on Live and Local. Those were some fast tunes, actually not sure what kind of tunes, but our guest will tell us in a moment, from a CD called Two for Two, featuring flutist Lawrence Nugent, The Smell of the Bog, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, and Emmett's Double. He's my guest on Live and Local because he's going to be playing with Patsy O'Brien on the Piper's Hut concert series on Saturday at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what kind of tunes were those?
Oh, the first one was actually a traditional hornpipe, and, you know, I kind of we kind of developed it into kind of a swing sort of jazz tune, you know. Well, it's a traditional Irish hornpipe, and we just kind of sped it up a little bit and had an arrangement with it more like with the swing, you know, the swing sound. And I went into two reels, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, a popular old reel from Ireland, and the last one was one that I wrote myself called Emmett's Double for one of my twin sons, you know.
And I picked up on that jazz feel as soon as I heard it in the first place, and I thought, no, that's a little unusual for the average Irish tune. And in fact, the jazz bassist, it turns out, is Larry Gray, who lives up there in Chicago where you are, and is also on faculty here at the University of Illinois. And
Larry's a tremendous musician, you know.
Jackie Moran percussion and Jim DeWan on the guitar. How often do Irish players, or let's just speak about you specifically, get a chance to team up with jazz players?
Well, you know, the style of music that I play, you know, I grew up playing traditional music, and of course I lived in New York and Philadelphia, and I was exposed to a lot of, you know, different sorts of music. I'm playing in different ensembles with singers and stuff, you know. And, you know, when you would be incorporated into a band, there would be, coming from Ireland and you come to America, you know, you're opened up to a whole dimension of different music than I grew up with playing. I grew up playing mostly traditional Irish music. So, you know, after years of playing, I guess, you develop your own way of playing, number one, and then, you know, there would be a lot of... you know, playing with, especially with singers and stuff, you'd be, you would have to, change your style. And when you're playing with other musicians, you might have a bass player there or a guitar player that could come from a jazz background, you know, or from a rock background or whatever, you know, so you have to try and incorporate your way of playing to be able to join in, you know what I mean? So over the years, I listened to a lot of jazz music over the years, and, you know, so I kind of developed my own kind of style. But mostly I play traditionally. But the odd thing like that, you know, now and again when I'm recording or doing a concert, you know, I mix it up a little bit, you know.
Well, I wonder how often it goes the other way, too, where some jazz player or group decides... I'd like to have the sound of Lawrence Nugent's Irish flute on my record.
Well, you know what? Sometimes that happens, you know. Over the years, I've played with a lot of singers from different backgrounds and recorded on their albums, you know, where they come from not even nothing to do with Irish music, but they want that sound, you know, behind their voice or whatever, you know. So, I've got quite a few jobs over the years, you know, doing that, you know.
I wonder if how much films might have influenced some of the popularity of the Irish flute, because I can just imagine any of a number of films where that sound will come in to evoke a certain image. For example, in the films, the Lord of the Rings films, there was that sound all the way through that movie. But
well,
there's,
you know,
nothing
what?
Particularly... Well, I mean, I guess there probably is something sort of Irish slash Celtic about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it has an ancient sort of feel to it, you know? And I guess they're trying to, you know, incorporate some of that into that, you know, to get that feel in the movie, you know? You often hear it all the time. You hear, like, a whistle sound, a low whistle, or even a regular tin whistle sound, you know? And it's, you know, it's got that really enchanting feel to it, you know what I mean? So, in many, many movies like Lord of the Rings and, well, of course, Titanic and all those big movies, you know what I mean, that done so well, you know.
The how old, do we have any idea how old the flute is? It's got to be one of the very first instruments anybody ever came up with.
Yes, exactly. You know, my history wouldn't be great on it, but it seems like every culture has some sort of flute, you know what I mean? And, you know, I guess going back to, it's thousands of years old, you know. I think they found some flutes in China that dated back 6,000 or 7,000 years ago, you know.
Do you play a particularly old one?
Yeah, the one that I play, it's called an Irish concert flute. It's also known as a transverse wooden flute, you know. It's like even a lot of classical players nowadays who play the silver flute use a wooden head joint, you know, because the tone is so unique, you know, from the wood, you know. The one I play is made out of African blackwood, you know. And, you know, it has to be aged for a certain amount of years before you can even bore it, you know. So it's got a different sound to it than, you know, the regular classical flute, you know. And the sounds are very variable on it, you know what I mean? And sometimes you pick it up every day, it has a different sound because just the way the wood is settling or dry, or sometimes you oil it, you know. And it has a different sound, you know, you can alter the sound of it very easy, you know what I mean, when you're blowing it, you know. So you can get many moods from it, you know.
You think you can get more colors out of the wood flute or a flute with a wood head joint?
Well, I would say that because I play that. You know, a classical player would probably say the opposite. You know, it might be some of them are chromatically set up, you know, but mine is like the one I played has, it's, you know, the keys are mounted on the outside, you know. There are extra holes that you open with a key, as on the bone system on a silver flute, you know, it's chromatically set up for all the notes, you know. You may be limited on the wooden flute a little bit because you may not have all the chromatic notes, you know, like silver flute has. But, you know, for me personally now, I like the sound of the wooden flute best, you know.
And is how long ago was yours made?
And the one that I have now, I have several different ones. You know, the one that I play regularly was made by a guy called Patrick Allwell. He lives in West Virginia, and he is one of the, you know, he's probably one of the most popular makers. He is probably the most popular maker of wooden flutes in the world, I guess. And, I mean, if you want one like the one I get, it's, there's a 10-year waiting list.
Oh, wow.
You know, to get one. So, I mean, but they date back, you know, Rudland Rose. There's many companies in the 1800s that made them in London. There's one called Rudland Rose, which is really popular. And there's lots of them around, you know. There's lots of. There mightn't be as many easy to pick up, but there's lots of wooden flutes, you know, of that caliber, you know, and a lot of people play them, you know, and especially it's very an Irish music, Celtic music is the most popular one, you know.
Sure. Well, let's give listeners that wonderful solo flute sound in a slow air. This is called A Longing for Peace, and this comes off of an album of yours of traditional Irish music for solo flute. And I'm talking with Lawrence Nugent, who will be with guitarist Patsy O'Brien at the Independent Media Center in Urbana on the Piper's Hut Concert Series Saturday night at 8 o'clock. You're listening to Live and Local. That's a solo flutist, Lawrence Nugent. A Longing for Peace is the name of the tune. And he'll be with Patsy O'Brien at the Independent Media Center in Urbana Saturday night. Lawrence, my guest here on Live and Local. Lawrence, I don't know if you remember, some years ago, you actually came down and played fundraising event for the Prairie Ensemble, which is an orchestra that I conduct. So we had a chance to meet on that occasion and have talked once since. And I remember just being mesmerized by the sound that you make, but especially when you play it solo. And I wonder how things feel differently for you when there's no guitarist, there's no drum, there's nobody else behind you, and it's just you. What is the feeling that you have when you're playing that way?
Well, you know, when you're playing by yourself, you know, a friend of mine, you know, once said, you know, when you're playing music, I guess, of any sort, you know, it relieves you from the tyranny of conscious thought. So, you know, especially when I play like the slow air that you just played, I play many slow airs, and most of the old ones, they date back hundreds of years, you know, and they are lamentful. You know, there's many different moods to them, you know. So like the one that you just heard there, A Longing for Peace, that was written by my dad, you know. And he was a great musician, a great fiddle player. And he had a Keeley band, so I grew up around music, the Pride of Erin Keeley band, you know. So, you know, growing up in the countryside and, you know, mountains surrounded by lakes and stuff like that, it brings a kind of a peaceful feeling to you when you're playing, especially the tunes like that, you know. It takes you to a different place in your mind, you know, that you normally don't get to do when you're going about everyday life, you know.
And it sounds like it takes you back quite a ways in time.
Oh, it does,
in
yeah.
time and
Many,
place.
It takes me back a lot most times, you know. But, you know, depending on your frame of mind at the time, too, you know, it has happy. Sometimes it can be happy, sometimes sad, you know. So, but playing slow airs is a lot different than playing the regular jigs and reels, you know. It's more about the feeling that you can incorporate into, you know, that, so that the people can experience exactly, you know, when they're listening to it, that can bring them to a place too that they're, you know, that they mightn't be thinking about normally, you know. Don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, sure. Well, it does, and I mean, you sort of made the leap that you know where you're going back to. You may not be conscious of it, but you're going somewhere, but the listener has no idea where you have gone, except as you're expressing it in music, and they can send it, you know, they can go wherever they want because people are going to absorb music in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That actually brings me to this question. Speaking of things nostalgic and transporting, what made you decide to move from Ireland to Chicago? It's been, about 20 years now, I guess.
Well, you know, I always say this. You know, I come from a little village in Fermanagh called Lack, you know, and I thought I was just moving to a different village, Greenwich Village in New York City. But when I got there, it was much bigger. But, I was like anybody else, you know, and I go out to see the world, and I came over here for a while, and I had relatives over here, and, you know, I thought I'd come to New York and hang around and, you know, get a job, play some music for a while and see what's going on. And here I am, you know, 22 years later, more 23.
And because it is so different, I mean, you've chosen cities here, New York City, Chicago. It is so different from where you're from. Was it just something that captivated you enough to make you stay? Or you actually found the work you needed?
I think it was, you know, I have got married, had kids, you know, stuff like that. So you kind of end up getting stuck, you know.
Oh, you got to be careful how you use that phrase, I think.
Well, I don't know, stuck. I love living in Chicago, you know what I mean? I love it, you know what I mean? But sometimes I miss where I'm from. I think that's just normal, you know. But you know what, and especially if you're a musician, you know, there's America's such a vast place. You know, I play all over the country, you know. So, like, I play with a band out on the West Coast called Kulanti. We play in Las Vegas all the time, you know. And I'm just currently, you know, in the middle of there's a huge play starting in Chicago that they're using all the music of my CDs on called, it's about Chief O'Neill, you know.
Mm.
And it starts on May 6th. It's the opening day, if anybody wants to come up. And Chief O'Neill was the captain of the police force here in Chicago, you know. And he collected Irish music, was his hobby, and he wrote three fantastic books, which are like the Bibles of, you know, Irish music, you know. And he collected tunes, and he was the captain of the police force in Chicago at the turn of the century, too, you know, the last century. And this guy called Adam Whiteman wrote a play about him, so we're all, incorporating his life and his music, and it opens on May 6th here, you know. And, you know, I was privileged to be asked to use the music of my CDs, you know, when it's going to be in the play, you know. So opportunities like that don't arise in a village where I'm from, you know what I mean? So
no.
As far as being a musician living here in America, you know what I mean? It's where else could you be? Where you could play with any kind of ensemble, or, you know, an Irish traditional flute player gets asked to play with a jazz singer. You know, that doesn't happen in my village very often.
No, I imagine not. So for the play in Chicago, are they just using your CDs, or are you going to actually be performing with them?
Well, it's going to be live.
Yeah, oh, good.
Yeah, the music's going to be live.
So live by you and some of your colleagues?
Yes.
Has that happened before?
You know what, let me see, no, they've used my music like in a couple of films and stuff like that, you know, I mean, St. Patrick the Legend, there was a movie came out way back, 10 years ago or something like that, they used a couple of the slow airs on that, off Shanachie, when I was working, well, who I recorded those CDs originally from, Shanachie Records, you know, and they got approached that they used a couple of tracks off the slow airs and a couple of movies, shot slots, you know. Just to create a sort of feeling that you were talking about earlier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've played in a lot of different, you know, plays and bands and stuff like that, but this is the first time where I've got something like that where it's going to be used in all my music, except for one or two tracks, you know, there's a few songs here and there, but 90% of the music is mine, you know.
Well, let's go out. We've had a mix of tunes at the opening, and we've had the slow air, and let's go out with something that's of at least what seems to me to be a fairly stereotypical Irish combo here. This is from your CD called The Windy Gap, and we're going to hear Maureen Glynn's and Pull the Knife and Stick It Again. These are jigs, right?
Yeah.
I love that name.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a brutal name. I don't know where that came from.
Well, I always wonder, you know, something like that really begs the question as to what the story might be behind at least the name, if not the tune itself.
Yeah, and Patsy, like, we never talked about Patsy, who's playing with me. Patsy is a phenomenal guitar player and jazz and rock and great Irish player and a fabulous singer, too, who'll be playing with me on Saturday night, so... Patsy is a great musician. He plays with the Kathy Ryan Band and many different ensembles, but he's an excellent musician also, you know. So it should be a great show. We're really looking forward to it.
And is he on these particular tunes as well?
He's not on those particular tunes, you know, but he'll be playing with me on Saturday night. You know?
And I imagine he'll be doing some singing of his own tunes?
Oh, yes, of course,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, he's a fine singer-songwriter as well as guitarist.
Yeah.
And it's Lawrence Nugent, flutist. They'll be together on the Piper's Hut Concert Series concert on Saturday at the Independent Media Center on South Broadway in Urbana. For more information on Lawrence Nugent, it's just lawrencenugent.com, and he spells it LAURENCE. For Patsy O'Brien, it's actually says patsyobrienwebsite.com. Not quite seen that before. And from... For more on upcoming concerts in the Piper's Hut series, it's pipers-hut.com. Lawrence, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Those are a couple of jigs called Maureen Glynn's and Pull the Knife and Stick It Again from an album called The Windy Gap, featuring Lawrence Nugent, flutist, and colleagues here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Once again, he'll be with Patsy O'Brien at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana Saturday night, 8 o'clock, on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our programs are made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713. My next guests are going to be performing on Sunday at Techline Studio in Champaign on South Locust Street. This is actually considered a house concert featuring Banjo Billy Matthews. This is how I first heard of him, but he's now being billed as Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews, and the Old Time Players, who are Paul and Christine Breen, both of whom, well, are co-owners of Techline, but they also are students of Billy's and do some teaching themselves and some playing out. And I notice here that in the publicity for this particular show, said that friends have been asking when Paul and Christine are going to play out somewhere, and I guess they're going to do it on Sunday night at 7:30. As a matter of fact, there's also a show on Saturday at Strawberry Fields involving...
Ooh, that's a goof-up.
That is a goof up. That's not happening.
On the agent's part.
Oh, so that one's not happening.
Yes.
All right, we won't mention that one yet again.
Okay.
That was presumably the goofing up agent who is speaking there, who's Christine Breen. And she's brought Banjo Billy in with him. Thank you both very much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
So, Christine, why don't you introduce Billy here? Because, I mean, I've actually met him maybe once or twice before, heard him play a little bit. But you've decided to put together this show, and
yes,
might be the best one to say a few words.
All right. Well, I've been following Fiddling Banjo Billy Matthews for about 7 years now. I picked up the banjo in my later life and decided I would learn how to play a banjo, and ran into Billy shortly after that. And he is a great banjo player, although today he will be fiddling. So I followed him around and got him to teach me banjo.
So you stalked him?
I stalked him, yes. Got him to teach me banjo, and every time he came to town, I would grab him and get a few lessons. And he was one of the few people who could probably get through to my brain how to deal with this instrument.
It worked.
And it worked. We're getting there.
Unfortunately, we won't have any evidence of that because somebody chickened out and didn't bring her banjo today.
Well, I'm acting as an agent today.
Oh, that's how that goes.
So I did not bring my banjo, but you have to come Sunday in order to hear me play. And what's his name?
Paul. Well, yeah, that husband of yours.
That husband of mine.
And what will he be playing?
He will be playing old-time guitar, and he's also been under Billy's tutelage for several years and is becoming what I consider one of the best old-time guitar players in Illinois.
You're getting there.
Yeah, working
on it.
He's getting there.
So you said every time Billy comes to town. And Billy, where are you currently living?
When I'm there, when I'm home, I live in northwest Arkansas. And I'm 20 miles west of Harrison, Arkansas. So it's deep in the Ozarks. And
in the stupid mountains.
Yeah, in the mountains there.
In the stupid mountains?
She calls them stupid.
Yeah, because we don't have any, so I love the mountains. So,
oh, so
he
you're
gets
just,
to see them every day.
Yeah, okay. Right.
But yeah, and it's a place I have had for almost 40 years. So I've been there and other places too, but that's where I usually stay.
So when you say when you're there.
Which is not that often.
And where are you running around the rest of the time?
It could be a number of places. Could be St. Louis, could be Kansas City, could be Columbia, Missouri, Alton, Illinois, Champaign, Illinois, could be Mountain View, Arkansas, could be several other places.
Places where you find
where
to
I
play.
Could, right. And so living rurally in a rural area, there's no work of any kind unless you want to go into farming. And not too many people want to do that these days. And so I get as much time as I can afford to stay there, and then it's pack them up and off to some other place. So that's how I make a living.
So go off to some other place in order to make a little money so that you can afford to go back home again.
Right. That's it exactly. So what I like to do is go make a pile of money and bring it home and sit on it for as long as possible.
Well, I actually, I noticed that you've got a blog going on your website, and in there, in the most recent one, you actually comment a little bit about your decision way back when to live this, to use your term, self-sufficient rural lifestyle.
Yes.
And I'm curious, what made you decide that you needed to do that?
I was brought up in academia, and I served my sentence at the university. And at that point, I decided there had to be something else besides what I was used to, the urban life. And I figured that, you know, at the university, of course, there would be libraries and archives that would always be there, and I could always look up things or learn things from there later. So while I was young enough, I should strike out and out into the world and, you know, make my own history and see things for myself firsthand rather than sticking my nose in the book to learn yet more information. I had to go find out for myself. So that's what I did. And I ended up in Arkansas building a house and raising children and doing unimaginable amounts of hard labor. But it's those are the things that build character.
Now, you also spent some time in Colorado where you got the name Banjo Billy.
Yes, and that happened on my 21st birthday. There was the Banjo Billy birthday bash. Anyway, and I was named Banjo Billy then, and that was because we had just begun what was called the Phippsburg Banjo Company, where a partner and myself, we made banjos. And I did that for about 20 years. And so at that point, I was called Banjo Billy because I made banjos and played banjos also. And then, along with that, someone gave me a fiddle way back then. And while I was making instruments, you have to wait for glue to dry. And you have to wait for different processes. And so while I was waiting, of course, I would play. And so I put in thousands of hours of banjo playing and fiddle playing while I was waiting for glue to dry. And that's, anyway.
That almost sounds like an old wives' tale or an old husband's tale or something, but it sounds like it could just well be true. I mean, these are things that happen. And you got to have some excuse to practice.
Well, right? That's right. And then at some point I decided the making the instruments was just a lot of unnecessary work, and I'd rather just play the instrument instead of making the things. Because there's sanding, scraping, shaping, cutting, measuring, all sorts of things. And of course, as you get older, you need bifocals, and you are dealing with, you know, high-powered machines and things like that, and one false move, and it could be over with. So with that in mind, might as well just put the tools aside and just keep all your digits intact and play away.
Since you just waved your digits at me, and they all appear to be there, and you happen to have a couple of fiddles next to you,
I do indeed.
Why don't you pick one of those up and
all right.
let us hear what this practicing has wrought.
Well,
see if it's done any good.
I don't know. I guess it's done me some good. This is a handmade fiddle that made in Mountain View, Arkansas in the early 80s. Those are my knuckles. All right.
Those are pretty good knuckle cracks there.
And you can see I dressed up for the radio.
Yes, we always do here.
Nice.
We always
Thank
do.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, I'll want me to play you something?
Yeah, please.
What am I going to play? All right. What did we say that one was? The Abbott Waltz. Now, the things that I play are old things, very old things, dating back to 1830s up to about 1930. And most of the things I've learned, about 85-89% of the things that I have learned in the last 40 years comes from other people who were alive at the time I learned from them. They're not now, but... So it's part of my job. Once you learn something and then the fiddler that you were spending time with dies, then that increases the responsibility of keeping their information for them. So it's one of those things. Once you get to be fiddling and doing all this stuff and playing all these tunes, then you have to develop a certain amount of respect for those who have come before. And so if you do your job well, there will be some that come after you. So it's one of those things, just being a cog in the wheels, I guess. Just one wheel that continues to turn and hopefully affects somebody else or another piece of machinery or another human being. This is a Canadian waltz, John Abbott. How's it go? Thank you.
The Abbott Waltz, played here by Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews, who is going to be playing with the old-time players, who are Paul and Christine Breen at the Techline Studio in Champaign, Sunday night for a show at 7:30. And Christine and has brought Billy in with her. Christine, is this an event presented by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots?
Sure, but I didn't actually ask them to sponsor this particular concert, mostly because I'm on the board, and this is really our first time playing out, and I figured that we would. I do so many concerts with the Folk and Roots in mind, and Folk and Roots is this November. I believe it's the 4th and the 5th. But we'll have to check those dates online.
Well, we've got plenty of time to hear more about that.
So,
hey, we're just getting into summer here.
Yes, we
are. 3 months early.
Right.
We don't need to be worrying about November yet, but...
Not yet.
I mean, this is the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival we're talking about in November.
Correct. Yes,
which
the festival. Which presents programs throughout the year. At Techline, we've been doing house concerts for about 7 years now. And we get artists that are traveling through the area to come in and do a house concert on their way to or from somewhere. So we've had some really great house concerts at Techline. And I decided with Billy here, and now that I'm getting to a level where I can play well enough to be in a group...
Not that you're giving us any evidence of that today.
No. Not today.
I'm just not going
to
cease rubbing this.
You have to come on Sunday night and support that effort.
Well, if you'll remember, maybe about 7 years ago, maybe a little bit before, after I had met you and I came and I visited and I said, we should have a house concert. And you said,
what?
What's that? And I said, don't you know about these particular things? People do it in their house or somewhere else, and it's a concert. And so I was the one who did the very first one at Techline.
Yes, you did.
And it could have been 05 or 06, something like that.
Yeah.
Long enough back there to forget exactly when, but... Yeah. I think I was the one that...
You were our first house concert.
The inaugural. Right. And why don't you call it a store concert? Because it's in a store.
Well, first of all, we're a furniture store, so when you come in, we have beds and chairs and...
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. House. And it's a home setting.
Like a home setting. Okay.
Actually, I have one of Christine's former chairs in my house.
Oh, you do.
And it's very comfortable.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Good, good, good.
Yes. Well, now that's one tune of 499 that you have on a recording.
Yeah, I did a project... where several years ago, people kept asking me, how many tunes do you know? And I said, I'm not sure. And so at a certain point, I said, well, I think I'm going to find out. I'm going to start recording these tunes and see where I get. And the object was to find 500 of them. And so I found 100. And I had a couple of lists that I made maybe years ago that had another 100 or so. And then I started just thinking to myself and writing down lists of names of tunes that I knew how to play. And I just kept going. And eventually I got to 501. And now there's many, many more than that. So I decided, well, if I could remember all this stuff, then I should write it down and record it before I forget. So it took me about 4 years to conjure up all these tunes. And meanwhile, I was playing and learning new tunes at the same time. So I just put them all together. And it was something that when I was young, if someone would have had that available for me, I would have used it right away to learn how to play easy versions of old-time tunes. But when I was young, there really wasn't anything. There were plenty of books and sheet music, but I don't do that. So, I learned by ear.
So when you said, which probably answers my question, you said record them and write them down. I assume you mean write down the names of the tunes.
Write down the names to go with the recordings,
yeah.
Right. And so I'm not currently going to write them in... regular musical notation, because it's actually The way to learn this stuff is to actually do it and remember it and learn by ear.
That's the traditional way to do it.
Right. And so I'm leaving my project be traditional that way. So if you put the disc on and play along, that's how you can learn these tunes without having to do what I did, which was travel several 100,000 miles over the course of 40 years to travel here and there to find places that I could learn tunes.
But that's so much more fun than just sticking a CD in your living room.
Well, that's true, but...
Even yes. If you do have a TechLine chair to sit in.
I know, and they're comfortable. But so I was thinking about it would be good to document these because a lot of the tunes that are in my collection are from all over. They're from the Northeast, and they're from the Southeast, and they're from the, say, you know, the Southwest, and they're from the Missouri Valley, the Ohio Valley, all over the place.
And in the project, is there really all these tunes on one CD, or is it several?
There's 15 CDs.
So do you also have some documentation that says, this tune, like you just played, the Abbott Waltz, is
right.
by so-and-so, if it's known who it's by, and this is where it's from, and this is who you collected it from, that sort of thing?
Yes, and that's what I'm at now, doing that part of the project, which is writing it all down and documenting it all, and then it will be on disc, you know, on a disc that goes with it, the information that you can put on your computer. What do you call those? PDF files?
Yes.
Anyway... And so, then it will be hard copy also, if people wanted the paper.
Are any of these CDs available now?
Oh, yes. All 500, which would be all 15 CDs, they're available from me right now.
On your website.
Or on my website.
And they're packaged by, there are five sets packaged, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, with 100 tunes on each of them.
Yes. Yeah, so each package contains three discs. With 101 tunes.
And your website is?
BanjoBilly.net.
BanjoBilly.net.
Yep.
I think since we know you've got now 501 plus a whole bunch more, we should at least have a couple of other tunes.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
You know, in the 10 minutes we have remaining.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll play another one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what was that one I was going to play?
Shiloh.
Is that what I was going to play?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, this one comes from a blind fiddler. Let's see. Oh, I just have his name on the tip of my tongue.
See, this is why you have to write it down.
You'll have to look it up on your project.
Yes.
Well.
Before he forgets, we have to write it down.
Before I forget. Ed Haley. This is a tune called Shiloh. And Ed Haley lived over in the East. And he was blind, but he could play really well. And this would have been, I don't know exactly when he lived, but I'm sure he's been dead for 50 years at least, if not more. Anyway, what's it? Shiloh.
Shiloh.
Okay. Now, most of these tunes, now like this one, they're for dances. The first tune I played, Abbott Waltz, that's a waltz. That's for a couple that waltzes around the floor. Now, this one would be more for a country dance. But we can play them fast or slow. This is, if we're not dancing now, so I'll play them a little slower. Here's how Shiloh goes. Thank you.
Shiloh.
Yeah. Tune called Shiloh, played by Banjo Billy Matthews, fiddling Banjo Billy Matthews. You told us the story, Billy, of how you got the Banjo Billy name, and when did you add fiddling to it?
Well, now that was added by a friend of mine, and that must have been 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little more.
Oh,
Lynn Smith. He's his. People know him by the name Chirps.
I've actually heard that.
Yes.
Is he around here?
He's
from Chicago, outside of Chicago.
He's outside of Chicago now, but was a big Illinois fiddler and still is.
So I've known Chirps for 35 years. And he would always call me BB, which would be Banjo Billy. And then he gave me this new name, Fiddlin' Banjo Billy. And then I looked at, a recording he had, and it turns out his name is William Byron Lynn Smith. So he's actually now BB, Billy Byron.
Yes.
And so now I'm Fiddlin' Banjo Billy, and he's Billy Byron. So now I'm FBB, and he's BB.
I thought you were going to say you're going to call him Lord Byron.
Oh, no, not quite. He hasn't been knighted yet. Anyway, but I've had lots of experience with people like Lynn Smith for, going way back to the late 70s. So it just he's somebody I met in my travels early on up in Michigan, and I've known him ever since.
I wanted to ask you a question, just watching you play the fiddle. You play it in, you put it under your chin as most people do, I would say. But I've seen a lot of old-time fiddlers who sort of lean the fiddle almost into your armpit or on your chest.
Yeah.
Is there a reason that some do one thing and some do the other?
Well,
this is a recent thing, right?
Usually, I don't ever hold mine up against
my chest.
Chest. Like that.
That's right.
A lot of fiddlers just learn it that way because nobody tells them that there's any different way to do it. And they look at it and say, well, I like holding it halfway down my chest and I just push it and I hold it that way. And so it's just a matter of playing it, I always like to call a lack of technique is actually a technique. And so a lot of these fiddlers just learn to hold it, or their grandfather held it that way, so they assume that that's the way you do it.
So it's however you learned it, basically.
So it's however you learned, and whatever you think is right, then just go ahead with that.
And if it works for you, then it works.
Yeah, and so that's kind of you have to try it and see, and work on it all the time and see what happens. But it seems like if you hold it up under your chin, that's why they have a thing called a chin rest.
Chin rest, yeah.
If you put it up under there.
You don't need a chin rest.
Well, you can, because what you're trying to do is play the best notes you possibly can. So in the beginning, when you're first playing, it's hard to even find a note that sounds any good. So there's many ways to do it.
Well, I'd like you to think of another tune while I mention some other events that people can go see and hear live, and then we'll go out on that tune. I'll just think amongst yourselves here for a moment.
Unless you want to
go out on the St. Paul Waltz.
You want to do the St. Paul Waltz and put that one on. It's whatever you like.
Oh, that's right. We have the St. Paul Waltz. I forgot we had the St. Paul Waltz. Mike, cue up the St. Paul Waltz. We'll do that in just a moment. Some other events besides Banjo Billy's concert with the Old Time Players, which will be Sunday night at 7:30 at Tech Line in Champaign. Tonight, you could go out and see and hear John Miller and the Romantics playing Gypsy Jazz at Rhythm Kitchen in Peoria. That's 6:30 this evening. Donnie Heitler has his weekly solo piano gig at the Great Impasta in Urbana this evening at 6. It's the weekly traditional Irish music session at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign tonight at 7. Elliot Chazanoff is the faculty trombonist at University of Illinois. He's giving a recital at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. Whole bunch of things tomorrow. Illinois Wesleyan University is presenting the opera Gianni Schicchi tomorrow and Friday at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 at Westbrook Auditorium on the Wesleyan campus in Bloomington. Illinois State University is doing an opera production, Puccini's La Boheme, Friday at 7:30 and also Saturday at 7:30. Justin Townes Earle is at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Eastern Illinois University's trumpet ensembles are playing in the recital hall of the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston Thursday at 7:30. The Decatur Youth Symphony is playing at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. There's a Sudden Sound concert featuring the ensemble of avant-garde jazz, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Quinoa, at the Krannert Art Museum in Champaign tomorrow evening at 7:30. And it's Lady Macbeth, a kabuki play, opening tomorrow at the Krannert Center at 7:30. That runs through Sunday. That's directed by Shozo Sato, and I'll have Shozo Sato on tomorrow's Live and Local. Many other things going on. We'll have to mention them at another time. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector, the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. So we actually do get to hear Christine Breen.
You do. You get to hear both what's-his-name, Paul.
And Paul.
Very
on the guitar.
And me and Billy. We did this recording for a fellow named Clawhammer Mike in St. Paul, Minnesota, who received a grant to study Minnesota fiddlers. And since Billy was actually born in the St. Paul area, he was included in the project.
And it's the St. Paul Waltz.
St. Paul Waltz.
Here on Live and Local, thanks both of you for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.